I'm Marcy, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I am glad to be here. I'm a little nervous, but I think that'll go away with time. I'm glad to share my story, and I'm glad to have a chance to use my mouth and my words in a positive way. It's kind of a living amends for me, because I haven't done that all my life. So thank you for this opportunity to let me do that. You're going to find out as I talk that I'm not a speaker, so I don't have to tell you that, but it'll be obvious, but I can tell some stories. I've got some stories. Some of them seem funny, but as compulsive overeaters, you're going to see the humor, and you're also going to see the pain in the stories, because you'll know why the stories are happening. So that's what my story is. It's like a series of little stories that happened to me. I'm just exactly like everybody in the room. I am a compulsive overeater. My life was totally unmanageable, and you'll see that in some of these little stories that I'm going to be telling. I'm going to try to tell some of the differences that happened to me to make me unique. And one difference is that I was very lucky, gifted, blessed, whatever word you want to choose, that I got a second chance. Because 2.5 years ago, I came back to Overeaters Anonymous, and I had been in Overeaters Anonymous before, about 30 years ago. And not everybody gets a second time around. Some people just never come back. Some people die before they get their second chance. So I'm very gifted to have that second chance. I'm going to pass my photos around. Everybody does that. And everyone pays special attention to the photo up at the top in the blue pantsuit, because the blue pantsuit is with me tonight. And I'll model this blue pantsuit at the end, I guess. I'll start out with my childhood. Everybody get comfortable, because I'm going to talk from my childhood to now, and I'm 62. So this could take a while. So sit comfortable in your seat. I was born after World War II, and I was adopted. My parents never had a biological child, and they were married 10 years, and they were childless, and so I was their baby, their pride and joy. I don't know my biological parents, so the only parents that I have, my mom and dad, are the parents that adopted me. And they were loving, hardworking people, grew up across the river in Council Bluffs. My dad was a blue-collar worker. He worked every single day, never called in sick, just a hardworking guy. He could tell funny stories, great guy. My mom was a homemaker. She loved to bake. She loved to cook. Food was love in our house. If you wanted to imagine what the household looked like, you could picture an episode of like Leave It to Beaver. Mom would be wearing a house dress and an apron. Dad wouldn't be wearing a suit like Ward did. And there wasn't Wally and the Beaver. There was just me. And my name is Marcella, and that's what I was called back there. I was called by my full name, which I never ever liked my name. I wanted to be a Susie or a Nancy or a Kathy. Finally, I became Marcy. I wasn't a gigantic, huge, obese child, but I was always pleasingly plump. That's what I was called. But evidently, the pleasingly plump became less pleasing, because I was last to be chosen when, you know, the sports team divided up. I was always waiting, come on, choose me. And usually, Marcella got chosen last. I remember one time, I must have been maybe fifth or sixth grade, and we got weighed by the school nurse. And I think all the kids were like 85, 90, maybe some of them were in the hundreds. And the nurse wrote down my weight on the little piece of paper and just showed it to me. She didn't say my weight out loud. All the kids said, how much do you weigh? How much do you weigh? I don't remember if I told them or not, but I do remember how much I weighed then, and it is actually more than I weigh now. It was 135 pounds. And maybe that doesn't sound like a huge weight, but when you're a child, That's a lot of pounds. I wasn't in junior high yet. I was still in grade school. So I had, you know, embarrassing moments through grade school. High school came along, and being a compulsive overeater, I tried lots of diets, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. But there would be times when I would lose weight and look halfway normal, or at least I thought I did. I always carry my weight mostly below my waist, so sometimes I could hide it in a full skirt, because it was the era of the can-cans back then. If you guys remember the poodle skirts and the can-cans, I could do some camouflage that way, hide some of my weight, which, you know, as you're a compulsive overeater, you get to be an art, a camouflage artist, because you can hide things. And the picture that I'm passing around, you'll notice that I am camouflaging my body behind a little flower girl, because that was my way. I purposely put her in front of me so that you wouldn't see what I looked like, because if I was standing there, that wouldn't have been very, very good. Anyway, I married my high school sweetheart. And I met him in high school, but he was older than I was. And four children came from this marriage. I have one daughter and three sons. And I am very, very proud of all of my children. They are contributing, productive adults. In spite of my parenting and my motherhood, this is my higher power working, these kids turned out all right. So I'm very proud of them. And that's an asset. You know, I tried to be a good mother, but there were times when I didn't have the skill or the knowledge. My own self-will just took over, and I didn't always do things the best way that I should have for my husband and for my children. So after the birth of my fourth child, I was at my top weight at that time. I decided that I would try yet another diet plan, because I had done Weight Watchers, I'd gone to exercise classes, I had made little bets with my friends, hey, if we lose the most weight, we'll give each other $20, all those bets that people make. But this time I saw a club called TOPS, and that stood for Take Off Pounds Sensible. And that must have been a very popular club back then. This would have been in the 70s. So I went to the TOPS club, and I asked this girlfriend of mine if she would watch my kids, and she did. So I went to the TOPS club, and when I got there, people seemed friendly and everything, but they were weighing each other, and the person who lost the most weight that week, I think, got a certificate, and they were awarded, but the people who gained the most weight, or if you didn't lose, I'm thinking they put a pig nose on their face, like a rubber pig nose. And to make a long story short, it just seemed like a cruel joke to me, because I was desperate and I needed help. So I went back, picked up my children from my girlfriend's house, and she said, how'd you like your TOPS meeting? I'm like, oh, no, that's not the club for me. And she said, well, I saw an ad in the newspaper for Overeaters Anonymous. She goes, why don't we go together? So the two of us went together, and the first meeting we went to was on 54th and Corby. It's in Benson, in St. Matthew's Church, I think. Well, 54th and Corby. And they happened to have child care in the bottom of the church. And we had to walk up like two flights of stairs to get to the meeting. And when we got to the meeting, this is still in the 70s. This would be like mid-70s. The Brown Book and the OA 12 and 12 wasn't published yet. They were still working on it. So we used the AA books. And that worked out nicely. We substituted food for alcohol, abstinence for sobriety. We read, we substituted, we marked. And we were able to get the idea of the program. I found a sponsor, and her name was Opal. I don't know if anybody remembers Opal, but she was around in the 70s. She was an older lady at that time, and really a good sponsor. And I began working the steps, and I worked steps 1, 2, and 3. And I was losing weight on steps 1, 2, and 3, and I don't know how much I lost, but I lost 40 or 50 pounds, and I looked really good. You guys have heard this, the saying, don't leave before the miracle happens. Don't leave. Well, I left while the miracle was happening. Because, I mean, things were going good. My life was fine. Why I left, I don't know. My sponsor, she passed away. Rest her soul. Natural causes. She was an older lady. And my friend that went to OA with me, she moved away. She moved to St. Louis. So I don't know if I felt I lost the fellowship. I don't know the reason why I left Overeaters Anonymous, but I did. So when I left, you know, the 40, 50 pounds that I lost, that's history, because this is a progressive disease. So I'm going to tell you some stories of my self-will. These would be things that I did, and I've picked the ones that I've done that mainly relate to food. And if I was writing the story of my life, this story would be called The Cake Pan Story. I went to visit a friend of mine, and she served cake at her house, and I ate the cake, and it was delicious, and I very politely ate my one piece of cake. And then when I left, I said, oh, I've got to have the recipe for this cake, because it was like a gourmet cake. It had ingredients and toppings on it to end all cakes. So she gave me the recipe, and I went home, and the next day, I went out to buy all the ingredients for that cake. And I baked the cake. It smelled great. I put the toppings on the cake. It smelled great. And I thought, oh, my family's going to love this cake tonight. The children were in school. My husband was working. They're going to love it. But I thought, wait a minute. How do I know if my cake tastes as good as my friend's cake did? So it was in a 9x12 pan, and I got out my little cake spatula, and I cut a piece, and I ate it. And sure enough, my cake didn't taste as good as my friend's cake. And I looked down at that cake, and I thought, oh, geez, that looks so funny. One piece is missing out of that cake. Then I took the knife, so where the square is, I made a straight line, and I cut two more pieces. And I thought, there, that just looks so much better. But then I thought, well, it's cut. You can still see the one missing piece. So I thought, if I eat two more pieces, maybe it would just look better. So I ate two more pieces, piece by piece. This goes on. Piece by piece, I ate the entire cake. All alone, ate that cake. Well, then I felt so bad, I had to wash up the cake pan, wash up the beaters, hide the ingredients, because all these toppings and everything came ingredients. Take that all out to the trash. My husband came home that night, and he said, oh, did you get the ingredients and make the cake for dinner tonight? Did you get that done? No, I didn't have time. I just didn't have time to make that cake. I also have another story about my drive home from the grocery store. I live fairly close to the grocery store, but back in the 80s, they didn't have as much bag and save type thing. Most of the stores put the groceries in the bags for you, and they carried them out and put them in your car. And whenever they sack the groceries, the treat things are always on top, because they don't want those to get smashed by the more wholesome foods, because those are lighter weight. So with these treats being on top, I realized I could just reach my hand right into the top of the bag, and there were the treats. And I had been working hard in that store, so all the way home, I would eat the treats out of the top of the bag. Then when we unloaded the groceries, when we got home, my kids would say, Mom, did you get any treats? And no, I didn't get any. I just didn't get any this time. Nothing looked good to me. They just weren't there anymore. Because sometimes I didn't eat them all, but I'd leave them in the car because I didn't want to bring the half-eaten bag back into the house. Another story is my case of the disappearing Sunday donuts. I have four children. I have one husband, and then there's me. So there are six people in our family. And on Sunday, it was kind of a routine. We'd stop and get a dozen donuts and come home, and kids would have donuts and juice and probably coffee and juice, and everybody would have a donut. And they were full and went on about their business. But then maybe later that evening or the next day, my family would ask, are there any of those donuts left? They just disappeared. No one knew where those donuts went. They were just gone. So my marriage ended up in divorce, and that's Well, it might be because of my untruthfulness, different character defects that both my spouse and I had. So marriage came to an end. So now my life begins as a single mother. And I really have no other adult to blame for my problems. And now I have we're on like a one family income, except I do get some child support. So I have to be careful on how I spend my money. So holiday time comes around, and the first thing I notice, I'm going to say Halloween. Boy, the Halloween treats are on sale, and I'm going to get there early so I can get these treats on sale because I got to watch my money. So I'd go buy the treats on sale, and I'd hide them away because they were for Halloween. They're not for now. But it was kind of like that cake pan. How did I know that those treats were really going to be fresh? So I would open up the bag, and I'd start eating. And they were fresh. They were just so fresh, I'd just have to eat from each bag. And then pretty soon I thought, oh, I don't have enough treats. So I'd just eat the rest of them. Then I'd have to go back to the store. Sometimes on holidays, I'd have to do that 3 times so I could save money. Now, I remember one Easter. I bought the Easter items that are wrapped in foil. And they're normally wrapped in pastel colors because it's Easter. I bought them on sale because I'm a thrifty shopper. I got those Easter treats home, and I thought, you know, the pink really looked good. So I opened it up, and I tasted the pink one. And I thought, well, are these just foil wrappings, or does each piece have a different flavor? So I unwrapped a blue and ate it, and I unwrapped a green and a silver, and I kept unwrapping, and at the time it seemed perfectly normal as long as I didn't eat 2 of the same colors in a row. It seemed like that was a logical thing to do, and I kind of spread out the foil and made it nice and neat, but then I hid it in the trash because that was evidence that I was eating. Because, you know, my overweight body wasn't evidence. Because nobody saw me eat these things. This is all my secret eating habit. Well, back to holidays. I wish I invited my daughter to come tonight, and she didn't show up. But this is a classic story in our family. One Halloween, where I worked, you were encouraged to wear costumes to work. So I wore a clown costume. I had borrowed this costume, a very nice costume, and I wore a clown costume because it was large enough, it fit me. And it had a big afro wig, the 3-colored afro wig, and it was a cool costume. And I went to work, and at work they had a potluck going. And I ate vigorously at that potluck. I tasted everything that was at the potluck and probably went back for seconds and thirds. And also at work they had sugary candy treats. And you know my history with that. I helped myself and ate quite generously from the candy treats. So I came home that evening, and my children are all excited because they're ready to go trick-or-treating. And my youngest son is born on Halloween. So you know, he's excited because it's his birthday. And I am a perfectionist mother. And I wanted this to be a perfect Halloween. I'm wearing my clown costume. They're in their perfect costumes. I wanted his birthday to go perfect. But they're hyper, and I'm stressed out because I've had enough food and enough sugar to make me just a basket case. So finally, I said, okay, everybody's going to sit down and eat dinner. I didn't say it to them that nicely. I probably said, you kids are going to sit down and eat dinner and you're going to like it. I said, nobody is leaving this house till 6 o'clock tonight to go trick-or-treating. So they sat down and ate. I don't know why I was so upset, but I was a frustrated, angry clown. So then a knock comes on my door, a kind of a soft knock, and I go to the front door and answer it. And a little tyke is at my front door, dressed in her cute little costume, and she goes, trick-or-treat. And I say, what are you doing here? It's not 6 p.m. Go home. It's way too early for trick-or-treating. And that little girl was so frightened, and then I slammed the door on her face. And I get back to the table, and my kids are, they're just They're like, Mom, you just yelled at a stranger, at a neighbor, because they were kind of accustomed to this. But I usually didn't do it to random strangers that came knocking to the door. So if anybody knows like a 30-year-old that has fear of clowns, I would owe that person an amends. But, you know, I mean, these are funny, but it's sad that my compulsion would let me treat an innocent child like that who came trick-or-treating at the door. You know, so you can imagine sometimes how I did treat my own family. So when it came to working steps and doing amends, I had a few. But there's hope. So there's hope to this story. January of 2007, my children are all grown. I'm getting a lot of second chances in my life. But after a very Merry Christmas and a lot of food, I'm not able to zip up my pants. And we're talking size 24 pants, and I couldn't zip them. So I was at work, and I looked up on the website and found a way. And I work out on like 132nd, and I come this way to go home. And there it was at 6 o'clock on a Friday night. There was an Overeaters Anonymous meeting, and I get off work at 5:30, and I thought, hey, that timing would just be good. I'm going to go. And I went, and I wasn't glad to go back to the meeting. I saw somebody that I had seen there years and years ago and recognized that person. That person recognized me. I met somebody there that had lost over 100 pounds at that meeting on Friday nights. I met somebody there that I shared that I was having a problem with gossip, and that person shared some of her program with me and gave me some insight on why I'm having this problem with gossip. But it took me a long time to go to any other meeting than the Friday night meeting, because that's the only meeting that I felt comfortable with. But eventually I did start going to other meetings and started to feel a little more willing, a little less jealous of people that had stayed in the program when I didn't, and starting to kind of see things in their right perspective. Well, now I'm going to tell you a story. And okay, no. My food was out of control, and I didn't have really a food plan. So my very first food plan coming back in January of 2007 was from another ad in the paper, and it was all the frozen dinners that were on sale. So I bought up a bunch of frozen dinners, and, you know, for us that don't really like to cook, they're so handy. Because what I was doing is I was eating constantly. There was no boundary. The frozen dinner in that square box, that was my boundary. It was my limitation. I'd usually have that with a salad or maybe some green beans. And some of them I still really like to this day. They're handy. You eat them, you're done. You don't have to clean up a mess. I had thoughts of doing the lap band. And I had just spent, right before I came back, I think it was $200, maybe more than that, on a powder mix that you mix and you drink, because it's going to make you magically lose weight because it's all natural. So, you know, that word all natural got to me. But I also became willing, and I found out my OA literature from the 1970s. And still the same stuff. I had to dust it off, had to get some new stuff, but I started reading the literature. So one Friday night, I came to the Friday night meeting, walked in the door, nobody's there. I'm like, you know, I'm really needing a meeting, and I'm actually angry at them, because I'm saying, Overeaters Anonymous, you're supposed to be here to help me, and nobody's even at this meeting. I'm just so pissed off at these people. Where are they when I need them? So I'm sitting there, kind of, I'm about ready to go home, and another young lady walks in the door. So there was two of us, and I said, okay, let's go ahead, have a meeting. She's probably looking at me like, well, I don't know if I want to stay with you or not. But I got out the stuff, and we kind of opened up the books and everything because we were going to start having a meeting. And then a third person walked in, and she was about my age, and she drove in from Iowa. And she was pretty familiar with the program, and so there was three of us there. This was going to be a good meeting. So while I was there, I shared with those three ladies, or those two other ladies, that I didn't have a sponsor. And that third lady said, I'll be your sponsor. What's your email address? And boy, the way she said it, I couldn't hardly say, no, you won't. I just said, okay, here's my email address. And she emailed me that night when she got home. She lived in Iowa, so it took her a while to get home. And, well, to make a long story short, or maybe it is already long, the regular people from the Friday night meeting had gone to an OA event out of state. And they had actually made an announcement that they were going, but I had forgotten that they weren't going to be there. And the lady who became my sponsor never came on Friday nights, but she just happened to be there the night that nobody else was there. And I read something that said, coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous. So that is how I met my sponsor. And I feel my sponsor was hand-picked for me. She's always gentle and loving. She gives guidance. She's not controlling. And even though she lives in Iowa, when I want her, she's there. She sponsors me not by word of mouth, by telling me, you do this, you do that. She sponsors me by the way she lives her life. She's just a lovely lady. I wish she was here tonight, but I just feel so grateful that I met her, and I feel it was a coincidence, God being anonymous and bringing this lady to my life. I was also very dependent on my scales because, you know, I was eating my little frozen dinners, eating a lot less calories than before, and weight should be coming off. And I'd be on that bathroom scale several times a day. It finally got so crazy that I had to throw the bathroom scale out on the curb. And, you know, I really wish that I had a picture of that bathroom scale, because the thing probably was 25 years old, nasty-looking scale. The clear part, or the part that's supposed to be clear, was all cracked and broken. Why somebody would want a scale like that in their bathroom, I don't know. But I didn't buy another scale. I would go to Shopko in the bath towel department. I took a scale down, and I'd put it down on the floor, and I'd step on that scale, and I'd get off, and I'd put it back in, and then I'd walk away. And to this day, I don't still weigh at Shopko. I have another place to weigh. But that's what I did for a long time, because I thought, this is a lot of effort to get me to go to Shopko, and I'd kind of look around to see if somebody was in the towel section to see me weighing. But right before I went to Overeaters Anonymous the second time, I did go to my doctor, and that's where my weight was recorded. And so, oh, I suppose maybe 2 or 3 months, I called the doctor and I said, would you look up my chart and just see what you recorded my weight at and call me back and leave me a message on the phone? And he did, and he goes, the magic number is blah, blah. And when he called me, I had lost 100 pounds. So, you know, I felt good about that. Thanks. I've had other second chances in my life. Oh, and by the way, my sponsor thought that doing step 1, 2, and 3 wasn't quite enough. So she gently guided me into doing my fourth step. And, all right, I have another funny story. Am I running out of time? Okay. This story is when I started writing my fourth step. I didn't do it in the columns like the AA book did. I did it kind of chronologically. Some of the same things that I told you tonight was in my chronological thing. Some of the things I left out because they're just too personal and too painful. But I did it chronologically, and I was at a Saturday morning meeting because I then had ventured out. I didn't have to just go on Friday nights. I could go to any Overeaters Anonymous in Omaha that I wanted to. I was really getting free here. And there was a person at OA that, you know, principles about personalities, this person I didn't care for too much. I mean, if I had a choice to be with this person or not with this person, I would probably choose not to be around this person. But this one particular Saturday morning, that very person said some words that inspired me to give away my fourth step and do my fifth step. And I just thought, here, another ironic situation. Of all the people that I would pick in OA, I would probably not have picked that person that inspired me to give away my fifth step. I gave it away to a priest. I did that because my sponsor gave her fifth step to her minister. So I'm trying to kind of follow her along, model her path, and it seemed to work. After I did that, it was a freeing time for me after I did the fifth step. So I know it's kind of scary. Talking up here can be kind of scary. We got to do scary things, but we get results out of them. One of my living amends, because I wasn't always the best mother, and I tried to pick out the more funny stories that would entertain you, because sometimes when I would go into rages with my children, you wouldn't be laughing. You would feel bad that I treated them that way, and they didn't deserve it. They were children. But I was a frustrated single mother who overate, and I needed more parenting skills. So I tried to do the best that I could with what I had. Also, when I did my fourth and fifth step, I had some memories of my childhood that came up. So our life wasn't always like Leave It to Beaver. There were some things that happened that weren't so pleasant, but we just never talked about them. And just knowing what was my role in the situation and what wasn't gave me freedom too. So that the fourth and fifth and all the steps, you know, it just gives you happiness, joyous and free, just like the big book said. But anyway, now my second time around, in a way, I divorced from my first husband, but I've met another partner, and life is really good with him. I've done some traveling as my second time around, and as one of my living amends, it's my goal, I don't know that I always reach it, but I do the best I can. I try to be the best grandma that I can be, because I can't bring back my children's childhood. But if I can be super grandma, or just the best grandma that I can be to my grandkids, I kind of think that maybe that's a way that I can do living amends. So I just thought I would share that with me. I'm about ready to end here, but I will model the pants. These are the pants in the picture, the silver or the shiny lining. My daughter made these for me, and she had to make the seams wider because they didn't fit around my hips. I hope I don't fall over getting in them. So this is one leg. So that's me modeling the pants. Kind of have to walk around up and down the runway in the pants.
You make that a cute skirt, Marcy.
I still got the jacket.
Yeah.
That's me in the pants. And are there any questions?
We will now open the meeting to questions from the speakers sharing how he or she accepts or uses the tool of recovery. We ask you to raise your hand and wait to ask your questions on the speaker card.
Thank you. There, that was awesome. Which step do you think, or how do the steps relate to your recovery? You talked about your fourth and fifth step. But what step do you use maybe the most? Or do you just use all of them each day?
Not all of them each day, but I use the first three each day, step 10 each day, and then any time I get an opportunity, I make an amends.
Awesome. How did you come to find the food plan that works for you today?
Kind of a combination of Weight Watchers and the frozen dinners and kind of high protein, and you know when you're eating compulsively. So mine is three moderate meals a day. Sugar is not a big thing to me, but salty fried foods I avoid altogether. I don't eat potato chips, Fritos, those kind of things. I don't eat french fries, but I can eat about anything else, even sugar in small amounts, no chocolate.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing, Joy. I really enjoyed it. But how do you handle, like, holidays? Because you talk about overeating at Christmas. That's tough for me.
On holiday times, I go to a lot of meetings. I let other people do a lot of the cooking, and I try to focus on the event and not the foods. Holidays are hard because they were always such a big deal for me. And it might be easier now that I don't have children at home, you know, that their parents can do the snacky things. But holidays are hard.
You talked about God's coincidences. And I know that you have a strong relationship with your higher power. Could you share a little bit about how that relationship's evolved or changed from being in the disease and throughout your recovery?
Sure. When I was a child, my parents went to church and I went to the religion classes and everything, and I still practice the same basic religion that I did then. I've never changed religions. So I've always felt like, well, I know about God, but I guess maybe when I prayed to God, it was like a child giving a list to Santa Claus. Do this, do this, do this. Now my relationship to God is totally different. I'm praying that I do God's will. I'm not always perfect with any of these things. I don't know. It just changes all the time. So it's hard to say how my relationship with my higher power did change. I think I'm more accepting of other people, because before I would be so judgmental because I thought God wanted me to be this way. I was kind of a self-righteous person, maybe. You know, and if you did something wrong, I told you about it because God would want me to do that. And I just... I don't know. I guess maybe God and I maybe have switched roles a little bit now, and I let him take over a little bit. Yeah. So.
Could you talk about what your abstinence is like?
Did I or will I?
Can you talk about what your abstinence is like? Mm-hmm. And how, you know, did you add things to it as you went along?
Well, I don't eat only frozen dinners like I did in the beginning, but I still do eat just 3 meals a day. Like I was telling her, I don't want anyone to do this if you can't do it. I hate to talk about this, but I can eat certain things that have sugar in it. They don't bother me. I cannot have chocolate. I eat a lot of vegetables and meat. Just try to eat a healthy, well-balanced meal. There's no secret to a food plan. There's no magic food that makes you lose weight.
Did I understand that when you called the doctor to ask him what the number was,
mm-hmm.
it was a year?
No. It was, I lost, on an average, because, you know, your body doesn't work perfectly, 1 pound a week. So it took 2 years to lose 100 pounds. And it's been 2.5 years, and I'm still losing, but not a pound a week. So.
Marcy, how did your relationship affect your program when you got into your relationship with God, into your other relationship?
Oh. I don't know. You know, he just says, oh, you're such a nice person, and I keep thinking, oh, you ought to have seen me before. You know, but and this relationship has been going on for 15 years. So, you know, there's been some rough times too. But I guess the question should be, how does my relationship affect my ex-husband? Because that's the person that I had to make amends to. You know, and I'm not saying that he was a perfect individual, but I feel at peace with him. If he doesn't live in this state, but I have a grandson that will be baptized at the end of this month, and he's invited to come down to this family function. And when we're together, I treat him civil. You know, I don't find faults. I don't pick at things. we can be together for the sake of our children. So that's more important, is how did it affect the relationship that I had from the past. I had a lot of resentment toward my parents for things too. They passed away, and I've worked my way through those too. You know, obviously I was not the perfect parent, so who am I to blame somebody else? They did the best they could. They probably did a better job than I did as parenting.
Do you still have the same sponsor today? And
absolutely.
You communicate mostly through emails and phones, do you?
Sometimes we visit each other, but mostly emails and phones.
Are you, you have easy access to the sponsor, pretty much?
No, hard access to the sponsor.
So then do you, is there somebody local that you communicate with?
All of you guys. Mm-hmm. And my sponsor is not a jealous person. She would encourage me to reach out to whoever I need.
Hi, Chrissy. Thanks for sharing tonight. Very moved by your story, inspired. Two questions. I'm curious. Do you exercise? Like, how do you move your body? Do you dance? Do you walk? Do you do any kind of physical activity? And then the second part is, I'm just curious if you could share some of your gifts that the physical, emotional, and spiritual freedom, what you've been given. Like, obviously your relationships, but like personal, like, you know, when I'm in bondage to self, life is on the couch, you know? So I'm just curious if you could share about some of that joy.
Okay. Exercise, I walk. I take long walks. I'm not a big go-to-the-gym person, but mostly walking. And my gifts to myself are, I'm just happier all the time, and how could I give you an example of that? Well, before, I was so busy fault-finding, and I'll use my poor dear ex-husband as an example. One time, he was just looking out the window, not doing anything wrong, looking out the window. And I thought, I hate the way he looks out the window. I was just, you know, so irritated. And I don't know, then I like picked a fight with him. It was a pleasant day, and I had to start this big fight. I don't do that anymore. When I first came to OA the second time, I kind of sat in the back of the room, didn't share a lot, and now I think this would be a gift. Maybe it's not. Maybe you guys are going to say, oh, let her sit back in the back of the room again. But I'm more self-confident, and that's a gift. I took a trip to Branson, Missouri, and Joe and I, that's the new guy of 15 years. Went with him. I went with one of my grandchildren, one of his grandchildren, and his oldest daughter. And his oldest daughter is a nice enough person, but she happened to be on my list of amends. She's probably about a size one, kind of a high maintenance lady. And that could have been a total disaster, that trip. But I'm going to say one of my gifts is, I know now when to talk and when to shut up. So that can be a gift. Gift. One of the reasons that my husband and I are no longer together is financial problems. And now I don't have money worries. And that's a gift. It's another freedom. That's all I can think of right now. I'll call you if I think of more. Barb?
Thanks, Marcy, for sharing. You were awesome. You talked a little bit about kind of being shameful, feeling shameful when you came back to OA. Do you share with people in your family or in your work life or whatever that you're in OA? Is it something that's developed over time? I mean, how open are you in, open for lack of a better word, just in everywhere when it comes to OA? And has it changed over?
My family and my daughter a lot, one of my sons a lot, because 4th of July, everyone was at my house, and he brought a bag of chips, which I can't have, and I said, now these have to go home with you. He goes, understood. And that's all that was to it. My daughter, she understands quite well how that first bite can trigger. People at work, Some people at work I share with, others I don't. Recently there was an occasion to celebrate, and people were bringing me things, and I got several bags of food items, and I was thinking, you guys, you know I don't eat these. But I said, here, and I just passed them all out. You know, and some of the people actually came in and said, you lost weight now. You can start eating these again. I thought, okay. You know, it's just not getting through. But I took at the beginning of June, I took a cruise to Alaska. Just Joe and I went to Alaska. He's having some health problems right now. He has cancer. And so we're just trying to have an amazing summer because we don't know how healthy he will be for how long. So we took a trip to Alaska and kind of befriended this lady there. And she was a larger lady, and you go through these buffet lines where there's lots of food, and she came back with her plate really quite filled full of desserts and sat down with us. And she was embarrassed then when she sat down, and she was saying things like, oh, my eyes are bigger than my stomach, and making these comments that I would have made. And I said, oh, yeah, I know that how that is. And she said, How do you know? You don't look like you're overweight. You're not overeating. And I said, well, I lost 100 pounds, so I know how it is. And she goes, oh, you had the lap band surgery, didn't you? I said, no, I went to Overeaters Anonymous, and I have done a little 12-stepping with this lady, sent her some emails and stuff. I try to wait until the opportunity is right to do the 12 steps, but some people at work are very understanding. They know others. It's like talking to the wall, and that's okay.
You did a great job, thanks for sharing.
Thanks.
When you talked about your steps, you didn't elaborate very much on 6 and 7. Can you tell me your experience or how you did those?
Well, no, just a lot of praying. I can't. They just happened. I can't really elaborate. You know, and I can't. I can. When it came to doing the amends, my goal was don't miss an opportunity. If someone crossed my path that I owed amends to, give them the amends. Don't wait to write the perfect letter. Don't wait to have it perfect, because perfectionism is one of my character defects. So if I waited to have it perfect, it wouldn't have worked for me.
Thank you for sharing, Marcy. I was wondering, are you able to, if I might have missed it, but are you able to identify some behaviors or thoughts that led up to you discontinuing meeting attendance, you know, back years ago? Were you able to, like, put your finger on, you know, what are some of the events or thoughts that you had that you stopped coming?
Well, I'm sure the death of my sponsor was a big event. My friend moving away was a big event, but it was my own self-will. I knew other people in the program, so events and sponsors, it was just me not being willing to work the program and maybe not going on to step 4. So this is the event right here. Is that all?
I have one.
Okay.
I'm just so grateful that you were willing to do this tonight. I want to know if you've always been this funny or...
This is me. I was going to come up here and use a lot of big words so you guys would think I'm a lot smarter than I am, but that never works because then I use them wrong and you know right away. That didn't work.
I'm a retard too. This is like my 3rd time in program, and I find that it's hard to keep coming back, especially if you have a slip or a relapse. Or what keeps you motivated every day?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I got this gift this time when I didn't before. I mean, I wish I could say, oh, it's because I read from the white book or I read from this one. I don't know. It just came to me. I stopped chasing it, and it's like a gift that I got from my higher power. I don't know why it's different. I don't know. You know, you hear, don't leave before the miracle happens. The miracle is happening. You just don't know it. It's not going to just suddenly happen someday. It happens all the time. So the miracle is happening to everybody who's here right now. So. So I don't know what made it different.
Thank you, Marcy.